I want to welcome Agile XRM to the podcast. I've known the people at Agile XRM for the past 12 years. I've seen how their business process management tool can add massive value to complex organizational processes in sectors such as finance and government. If you have complex processes or a need for dialogues on the Power Platform or Dynamics 365, take a look at how this BPM tool can add value. You can find them at agilexrm.com or check out the show notes for more details. Welcome to the Power 365 show. Full show notes for this episode can be found at nz365guy.com/236. Before we chat with today's guest, here's a quick message from our sponsors. Today's show is brought to you by me. 2020 has been a hard year for many. If you're not sure about the direction you're taking in your career, you may need a coach. If this is something you're considering, express your interest today at nz365guy.com/coaching. Now let's get on with the show. Welcome to the show. Today's guest is from Seattle, Washington. He's the Microsoft Chief Financial Officer of Microsoft Business Applications. He knows where all the investments have been made in the Power Platform and Dynamics 365 and where they all went in the past. You can find him on LinkedIn. Jeff York, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's good to have you on the show. I think the last time I met you was over a year ago now. It was BizApp Summit in Atlanta.
Back in the good old days when we could actually get to see each other in person.
Exactly. My gosh, how time's flowing, and of course how our world has changed in recent times.
I know. You can definitely say that again.
Yeah. So tell me a bit about you. Family, food, fun. What do they mean to you? So kind of all non-work related things.
Yeah, so we have a little pod of three boys at home, kindergarten, fourth and fifth grade, so they keep us moving. And we're all now starting to plot our moves this winter and see if we can get some skiing in. But the whole COVID thing is putting a damper on things. So we always used to go to Whistler, and it was one of our favorite places to go. And right now you can't cross that border without a 14-day on the other end. And so anyways, we try to get out and about, and the three little boys keep us busy.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't realize that, you know, it is only a short drive, right, from Seattle up to Whistler. And I didn't even think that you'd have to do a border lockdown to go in there.
You have to do a 14-day quarantine on that side. It negates a long weekend or a week up there anyways.
Yeah. So what are your options around Washington?
We have a couple mountains that are close around here. And then if you're up for a drive, you can go to Oregon or mm-hmm. Idaho, and there's some great mountains as well. So we'll still find it.
You'll work something out.
Yeah.
You'll work something out. Nice. What do you do when you're not working?
And so then outside of that, there's always soccer games sprinkled around with the boys. Mm-hmm. And then we try to get out and ride bikes and walk around the neighborhood. I taught my oldest son how to surf behind a boat this summer. So that was a ton
of
fun.
Wow, yeah.
You get the theme of it's wrapped around three little boys,
yeah.
You can tell.
Yeah, totally. What about food? I mean, you know, in Washington, every time I go there, I cannot avoid, going to the fish markets and getting a nice salmon burger or something like that. What's it for you?
Yeah, seafood. I'm a big fan of oysters around here are always pretty good. So a nice glass of wine and some oysters. And we kind of have a little bit of everything. We've got great Italian food, Thai food, sushi, good steak places. So we try to get out and about and explore around as well.
Very nice. Do you like scallops?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, from where I'm living, I can literally drive 5 minutes down my road, jump in the water, and I can swim out and get scallops. So
I don't even know what I would do with one. I've never prepared them myself, so.
All you need is a little bit of herbs and beautiful. Do them on the barbecue or something like that. Very nice.
Perfect. I hope there's a little wine on the side there too, then.
Oh, always got to have wine, right? New Zealand's got a very good, thriving wine industry, so yes. A lot of options there.
Yes.
Yeah, very good. So tell me a bit about your background in Microsoft. How long have you been there, and kind of what are the hats you've worn that have brought you to what you currently do?
Yeah, so I think I'm here 17 or 18 years maybe. And prior to that, actually, I was at a small CRM company here in Seattle. I was at Onyx Software.
Wow.
And my future wife was at Microsoft and flipped me a job description that looked pretty interesting. And so I came over, and I was in the U.S. subsidiary for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. Then I moved abroad. I went to Portugal, and I was the CFO of our business there for a couple of years.
Wow.
No way. That was before kids. And so that was a super cool life experience, both personally and professionally. Mm-hmm. And then we came back, and my wife was pregnant at the time. And so we had our firstborn here. And I did, I was in what today is known as WCB, but I was in like the enterprise headquarters or strategy mm-hmm. team. Then I did a planning across the entire company. I ran the planning process, the strategic planning mm-hmm. budgeting process for the company for a couple of years. And then after all that, I realized that I worked at a product company, had never worked in a product group. And so I came over, it was still called MBS at the time.
Yep.
For a short little while. And I've been here ever since. And, you know, the business has morphed around a bunch. My role has changed a bunch. And it's been just a really exciting period of time. It was, in hindsight, it was an amazing and smart move.
Yeah. Listen, let me just jump on. We'll come back to this. But Portugal, you know, it's one of my favorite countries in the world. Where were you? Porto or Lisbon? Where were you based? Lisbon, I suppose.
Our office was not in Lisbon proper, but it was like mm-hmm. right outside of Lisbon. And then I lived in a place called Cascais, mm-hmm. which is about 30 kilometers outside of the city. And it was out on the coast. And it was a little town that a bunch of people had their second home in. So they would come mm-hmm, out on mm-hmm. the weekend there, and traffic was pretty bad to get into the city. And then during the week, they'd go into the city and work.
Yeah.
And then we traveled all over Europe. And what was interesting is on our flight home, we had a longer list of places we wanted to go visit than on our flight over there.
Yeah. I so believe you. Yeah. I mean, Porto's got to be the favorite place, you know, for me. I went down to the Algarve a bit as well, but Porto, I just love.
Yeah, it's gorgeous up there.
Oh, gorgeous up there. And of course, I love port. So I went through a lot of wine caves there. You know, it was so good.
The hotels when you stay there, they always have a little bit there. And I remember when I went to interview there, they put me up in a hotel right on the water, like the waves mm-hmm, were mm-hmm. crashing against right under my window. Wow. A little port on the side of my bed, and so I signed up. And then, sure enough, when I literally moved there, and I was in temp housing for, I don't know, a week or so, I was definitely not in that hotel. And I was like, oh, the honeymoon's over. Now I am inland right now.
You gotta work. So you say you've been in biz apps now across a good few years. You were there before, correct me if I'm wrong, before James Phillips, you know, headed up engineering. So are we talking about Jujar days, Bob Stutz days?
Bob Stutz was there for a little while. Mm-hmm. I was there for one day with Kirill right before he left. And so Bob Stutz and Jujar was there. And then James came in shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow, right back at Kirill. Haven't heard his name for a while.
I know. Well, it was one day of overlap.
Yeah, I've got a feeling that he worked for an Australian company for a while, like the telecommunication company in Australia. Well, they might have that wrong.
Touch. Yeah, I honestly don't know.
Yeah. No, do you know what? I feel he went on to something like the virtualized desktop of the competitor to Microsoft.
Was he at VMware maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
Something like that.
Wow. And, I remember many conferences attending where, you know, he would get up and speak and stuff. And
yeah.
Wow. Okay, so you've definitely been there a while, and especially through the Jujar period. What was the massive tipping point, the change? Like we noticed it out in the community and in the market when James Phillips came into role. There was almost like you know, a resetting, a reestablishing, a total change in the organization. Can you talk a bit about that?
Yeah, I mean, gosh, the business, just if we compare today to back then, is just in such a different place. Mm-hmm. And we, the royal we, like we as a company, James as an individual, the entire engineering team, we definitely went through a reset. And yeah, just, you know, gosh, if you walk back 5 years or so, mm-hmm. I mean, we were still heavy into all the on-prem businesses that we had purchased. We had different engineering leads. So that, you know, there was a CRM person, an ERP mm-hmm. person. James actually was off in a different business group with Power BI. Mm-hmm. You remember debates and wars over XRM mm-hmm. versus other things. And so we,
correct,
like sometimes you couldn't use the word XRM, but yet customers mm-hmm. wanted to buy it, but we didn't actually have a SKU for it. So we would sort of back end work something up. We started to then, you know, use terms like CDSA and CDST, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and we'd talk about all those things. And then similarly, it was, you know, complicated when you got into the big deployments, and we had some big deployments that didn't go right. And so then there were questions around, you know, stability and product and what's the future here. And, you know, coming under a single engineering lead, James is a fantastic individual and mm-hmm. engineering lead. He put in place, together across all the business, but Project Bedrock, Project Bahnhof, to get serious about the product, the stability, the implementations, the cadence by which we would ship out all the new features. So we do that twice a year now. Mm-hmm. You know, we, because it was a single engineering lead, we moved through all the different, you know, quote unquote wars over different platforms and technologies.
Yeah.
We launched Dynamics 365 and started to make real the notion that, hey, they're all connected and they're mm-hmm, they're part mm-hmm. of the same thing. And so, gosh, we're just in such a different state right now that it's really impressive, you know, as a business, and the breadth of the portfolio and the continuous innovation is just staggering.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're just in such a great place now, because of a bunch of those moves.
Yeah, there was a period of time there that, you know, a lot of the people in the market were going, you know, your release cadence is way too frequent. There's so much happening. It is just constantly drinking from a fire hose. The thing is, now I just think it's accepted as normal. And kind of that ramp up is over. And I was even, you know, we're recording today, which is the first day of Ignite. And I'm like, man, there's not enough stuff being talked about here. There's not enough new, because I suppose your appetite for so much change has been built up now that you're just always looking for what's new, what's happening next, you know, where to, you know, where's the growth?
Yeah. And it's always a double-edged sword, right? Because we want mm-hmm. to take all the very best innovation and get it out as fast as you can.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ecosystem's broad and wide, both customers and partners and ISVs, and mm-hmm. you can't just keep throwing things at people without the right amount of preparedness and readiness beforehand.
Yeah, yeah. You know, back in the day when you started in this business group, you know, it seemed that Salesforce was always very front and center, and we're always looking at them and what they were doing. And, you know, I know from, you know, being working at a partner through that period, I was often, they were my main competitors. Every now and again, I'd come mm-hmm. up against an SAP implementation of their CRM, but it was definitely front and center. This was in Australia, I was operating at the time, was clearly Salesforce. Yet, you know, since we've gone to Dynamics 365, I'm finding we don't hear so much. There doesn't seem to be a, oh, what are they doing? We should do the same. And has that been like a fundamental shift in thinking internally?
I think you're on to something. And it is interesting that, you know, years ago, and maybe it was where we were as a business and a product, we maybe were mm-hmm. chasing more. And so we talk about, hey, they have that, and gosh, we should either build or buy that.
Yeah.
And I feel, you know, internally, similar to how you talk, you know, we don't have those discussions. It's less around, oh, they have that, so we should too. It's more mm-hmm. of, what is the need in the marketplace? What do customers ask for? What do partners signal? Where do we want to take our innovation? What's that next step? And, you know, sometimes we'll go build down a pattern and other companies are doing it in a similar place. And sometimes that's not the case. And we're the only one out doing a scenario like that.
Yeah, it seems now like with the Power Platform particularly, and you know, the Power Automated, that type of thing, we definitely are dominating from a leadership point of view now. We're the ones being followed, if you like. And where was that smarts to get onto this as early, you know, in creating a, you know, low code, no code platform as early, you know, is what Microsoft did in the situation? What was the brainchild and the thinking behind that and the, I suppose, understanding of a really large market opportunity?
Yeah, we probably write chapters on that and there are probably other people that sort of lived it. And, you know, many elements of that was around even before my time. Like, I think the predecessor to Power Apps has been around for a while, but I will say, you know, if you and I talked briefly about like the XRM talk, I think for a long time we've realized there's this place where customers want the finished solution. Mm-hmm. And then there's this many, many, many other situations where, hey, there'll never be an app built for my micro vertical, my business scenario, but I could get, you know, help and support from the platform that was built over there. And so I think it took us a while to figure out a way to satiate both sides of that camp, to both have the finished products that we'll call today Dynamics 365, and then an ability to go let someone purchase that platform and build from that, but go customize in a way that no one else in the world would ever do. And so, you know, thank God we're past those debates and we have both offerings and we're pleased with the momentum of both.
You know, when you're looking forward at the growth, you know, when my first time in Seattle was 2012, and I was at the Advanta campus, and there was kind of a joke that BizApps was, you know, inside Microsoft paid for the company picnic at the end of the year because it wasn't a, you know, a big pillar of Microsoft's business. Yeah. And I just saw the other day an analyst briefing. I forget who the Microsoft person was on that call. And, you know, now the BizApps is a, what, $3 to $4 billion in that type of range business now within the organization, and definitely, you know, from Satya, what we're hearing is a key pillar of, you know, the Azure, the Microsoft 365, and then the BizApps story is really become a key part of the business.
Yeah. Yeah. If I go back on my own history, when I moved into this business, I remember senior people in the company saying, "What are you doing going over there? You're crazy. Aren't they about to sell that part of the business?"
Yeah, that was the talk, right? Yeah.
For sure. And, you know, I can categorically say that there's been a shift across the company that, you know, I don't worry for a second about that. We're central to the strategy. And so, you know, if you zoom out for a second, we've had these discrete battles by each cloud. So Azure versus the competitors there, and you know, that's a highly competitive, very few competitors in that market. And, you know, that's running on its path. Office 365 is a different place. And we came from a different position of power as that cloud transition happened. But there's also, you know, there's for sure there's competition in that business. And so, you know, our differentiation as a company is bringing the productivity and the infrastructure together with the business applications that actually run everybody's business. And bringing all those together will truly help customers digitally transform the way they run their business. And so, you know, our belief is, hey, it's not just one of those independently, but our ability to bring all those together and with our, you know, with our teams and our partner base is the thing that helps us differentiate. And so we're very squarely within the strategy of the Microsoft cloud.
You know, you mentioned their digital transformation, and we've been talking about digital transformation for 4 to 5 years now. And I saw a meme recently going around, you know, with COVID and all, which was the meme was, you know, who's had the greatest influence on digital transformation in your business? And it go, was it the CEO? Was it the CFO? Was it the CIO or was it COVID-19? And of course, and if, you know, this calendar year of 2020, we've seen a lot of businesses being hit by COVID, and it's really affected what their potential lack of digital strategy or digital culture within the organization. And I was speaking to a colleague in the UK last night, and he was saying he's getting 3 major deals, and they're one of the big GSIs, a week now, just around COVID-related systems that they're building on Power Platform.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, like, if there's nothing else the world has learned out of the COVID pandemic, is that, gosh, you better be agile and resilient as a business. And you think about, every business model got checked at the outset of that. And you think of restaurants, many of them sadly are out of business, and many of the ones that are still in business, they changed their business model. And, you know, some are selling the raw ingredients, some very high-end restaurants that never did takeout now do takeout, and it's a fabulous experience. And, you know, you move from there to retail, you know, their definition of customer success used to be, gosh, greet you at the door and do amazing things. They can't do that now. Medicine, you know, I think never would have been done over the phone in the past. And now I think that's a central strategy to all sorts of healthcare organizations. So, I mean, gosh, you could just walk down every single industry and say that they're incredible impact of what COVID's done. And so you've got to be resilient and agile to get through that.
Yeah. So, you know, FY20 is over, and I talked to Hayden Stafford halfway through FY20 about the investments that have been made in the business. And he took some eye-watering numbers and factors of, you know, increase in investments from a, and of course he was focusing particularly there on the sales side of the business, his global sales footprint, the headcount that he you know had, especially after James on his side of the business has, you know, seen a phenomenal growth in the headcount of, you know, the engineering side of things. In hindsight, how is FY20 finished out for you, and then what are your thoughts around FY21?
Yeah, we went into FY20 with, and sounds like you and Hayden talked about it, but we went into the year with a great deal of investment, and then a couple of months later, the company invested a couple of hundred on the sales side, a couple of hundred headcount into the business on top of that, which for us in Microsoft is just sort of unheard of. Like, we always do things in the annual planning cadence.
Yeah.
And it was tremendous because it meant that we were out of the drama and hysteria of an annual plan, but also it allowed us to go get very pointed on what we wanted. And so we went and hired a whole bunch, predominantly external hires. And one of our learnings was, gosh, when you do that during the annual cycle, you're in with all the other businesses. And so you get a lot of internal hires, which is fine, but it doesn't help you, you know, move forward, you know, as a company. And so that was, we were incredibly optimistic and bullish about that. Of course, COVID hit. And in the first days of that, we paused, and, you know, everybody in the industry paused and said,
totally,
what does this mean? And specific to business applications, I think we all thought, hey, would business applications as a category be relevant? And we came out of Q4 with a resounding yes to that. And so we beat our internal expectations. We grew new business. We thought we would decline in the pandemic. And so, you know, what could have resulted in a really rough year, we came out pretty happy with the performance. And so then switched that, and we're a couple of months into FY21 now. And we're equally bullish. And so, you know, we had our learnings in Q4 that said, yes, in fact, business applications as a category still is relevant. We've seen plenty of the competitors still print pretty good growth numbers. Everyone's tampering down a little bit, but growth numbers are still something to look at. And we're up, you know, many hundreds of extra sellers in the business, so that helps, and those will turn productive this year.
Yeah.
So we're incredibly optimistic. We also stood up a set of free customer offers in the middle of the COVID pandemic. And so we were testing that as a, you know, can we get a viral motion going where we get customers up and running and it's free, and then let's get that deployed, and then we can grow from there.
Yeah.
So that had good resonance in the market. So we're just about to finish up Q1 here, and we're feeling good about momentum.
So tell me about Softmotive.
So broadly speaking, we hadn't done acquisitions for a while, and there were some done in my very earliest days or before then, and they were always.
So what was the first one that you were involved in? Was it the marketing pilot, or had that been done, or was it Parature, or
Parature? He really tested my memory here. I can't remember if Parature happened, like the purchase happened when I was here, or I got here and we had just done it. Earliest days of bringing that in. And if you go back to our discussion around James coming in as the single engineering lead, and we were doing a bunch of, call it, foundational work to the product, it just wasn't the moment to go do any sort of acquisition, to go add in new complexities and code bases and all that sort of thing. So we just sort of strategically put that on pause. And now with the product where it is, now was the moment for us to reduce that pause and start to see what's going on out there. So Softmotive was, you know, the RPA space is one where we think we'll have a whole lot of growth and innovation. We think there's a lot that can happen there, and we think that we as a company can go help customers. We think that there's a whole bunch of automation that can go happen, radically help move forward business. And so, you know, with that in mind, we were on a build pattern for Power Automate.
Yeah.
And we came across Softmotive, and it seemed to make a bunch of sense. And so we pulled that one off.
Yeah. So does this mean that you've moved in across the business to a cycle potentially looking? I know you'd always be looking, but is there a more serious look at going, okay, how do we rapidly fill some gaps, you know, if they're there, or take advantage of new markets?
Yeah, it's a place where we did always look, and we do continue to look. And I would say now we're probably more in a position where if the right thing comes along, we're in the position on the engineering side where we're not doing that foundational work, but we can go acquire the right technologies and IP and fold it into the broader technology.
Yeah. Okay. So that it could be, and once again, an interesting landscape for the rest of this year that we're operating in. And of course, Hayden's new replacement's just been announced.
Yeah. So Vahe is going to start the role October 1. We're counting down the days, because I remind him every couple of days on Teams. He pops in on something, and I say, "Hey, Vahe, come on, get over here."
Yeah.
He's a fantastic guy. So I've worked with him. He comes from our Western Europe business.
Yeah.
Not business applications, but he was running the all-up Western Europe business, which is a very huge and complex market.
Yeah.
And prior to that, he ran, I'll get his resume probably the details wrong, but he ran the mid-market, which has a heavy play with partners as well. So he comes from this background of knowing the complexities of all the different geographies. He was a big champion for business applications for us when he was in Western Europe. And prior to that, you know, mid-market and partner, and you know, having some appreciation for what that means to work through. Mm-hmm. So, gosh, we're super excited to bring him into the family here. And I think that he's just going to do wonderful things for us in his new role. So we're, as I said, we're counting down the days for him to get here and get his feet wet.
Yeah, yeah. So the ramp up time, being that he's, been in Microsoft so long, would be less. But are you envisaging much of a ramp up time for him to get across? Because he'd be responsible for the global sales business, right, of BizApps.
That's right. That's right. Global sales for BizApps.
And so with no handover from Hayden, although I saw Hayden, I think, was one of the first people to congratulate him on taking the role on LinkedIn when it happened. And, you know, just even around the logistics, how hard is it for, I don't know, to come in from Europe to the US now with COVID and reestablish himself? Is that, do you think it'll impact, or do you think he will function?
I mean, sure, there's complexities to the business that I'm sure he's not aware of from his current role. But I have to say, Alyssa Taylor, Hayden mm-hmm. Stafford, myself, and the teams, we spent a good amount of time with Vahe when he was running Western Europe. We partnered with him through a couple of business transformation projects. And so he's definitely no stranger to the business. And so, you know, we'll bring him in and do everything we can to gently expose him to all the gory details of things. But I think his ramp will be pretty quick. And he's respected in the field community internally mm-hmm. and externally. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. that'll also help. I mean, a big part of his role is to go galvanize across his old peer group, you know, mm-hmm. all the leaders mm-hmm. of the areas and, you know, work with them, work with their teams, understand, you know, where are we having momentum? How can we fuel it more? Where are we having friction? What can we work through to remove some of that friction? Same with partners. And so I think, you know, his field background, and he's been at the company a long time. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, he can step into that role pretty quickly.
Yeah, yeah. So just pivoting on to what the analysts are saying in market, how much do you listen to what they say? And I know you influence what they say to a degree as well. But what are you hearing that's making you feel like, you know, we're on the right path here? And then are there any kind of checks and balances that you're like, you know, should we be looking at this or doing that or something else? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, so I spend a decent amount of time with Wall Street analysts mm-hmm. And then Alyssa Taylor, who runs product marketing.
Yeah.
She and I do a bunch of tours as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some common threads for sure. I mean, first of all, the background of knowledge as you go out into that population is varied. And some mm-hmm, have mm-hmm. a deep understanding of this space and our history, and many, many don't. And so I do have to say, like, a lot of times we somewhere very quickly in the first few minutes of a dialogue, we walk through the history. Where'd we come from? We started in an on-prem business. We did some acquisitions, very mid-market. We started to build the cloud business, and that's grown, you know, very well. And it's in a vastly different state mm-hmm. than it was even a year or two ago.
Yeah.
We'll walk through the portfolio. So we'll do a little bit of the history there. And then we go into the strategy of, first of all, like, why is Microsoft even in this business? What and why do we have a business application business, and how does that relate to Azure and Office 365? And you and I talked about that a little bit before. We go into the strategy around and our belief and position on data, and just how, you know, data now moving out of all sources everywhere and our collective ability to harness that and take insights from it, not trap it in silos, bring it back to the customer so that they have, you know, real-time insights of what's going on either in their customer base or their supply chain or what have you. That's a critical key to a customer either performing better for their customer base, transforming their business, or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually a good chunk of the dialogue, and we go in through an understanding there. And then we get into, competitive differentiation, and then we get all sorts of questions like, why don't you go buy this or that, or are you going to buy big things? Are you still a mid-market vendor or are you not? So we'll talk through that. And in terms of the space, I think, you know, business applications, again, is a category. I think there's widespread belief that there's, you know, a lot of headroom in that market for growth, and those that can delight customers and continue to broaden their set of offerings will be the long-term winners in there.
That's interesting about the mid-market assertion they're making, because
we smile every time we get the question. We're like, I hit play to my pre-recorded response to that one. So.
But sometimes I wonder if it is a bit of the FUD that the competitors, you know, I worked for a while in federal government in Australia, and I was always up against IBM. And IBM would just roll out this, you know, Microsoft SMB, the mid-market. Right. They can't play in this space. Like, who are they? And of course, you know, history is kind of proving them quite wrong now. But it is funny, as in that there is that perception, and it's definitely an old school perception rather, I feel, than a modern one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I go in and share, hey, 96% of the Fortune 500 use Power BI and 57% use Dynamics 365. And so you get some eyes on that, and then you start to walk through some of the examples and stories, and they're fun to talk about.
Yeah. So in the recent digital events, you know, that are being, you guys are starting to roll out once again some big brands, Coca-Cola most recently, that, you know, that I saw obviously adopting the Power Platform. Just looking at digital events, you know, we're in the middle of one now with Ignite. There's been a few run this year, and there's been a whole raft of community digital events. And I don't know, I'm feeling a bit fatigued maybe, and maybe that's because, you know, I have a need to attend them all.
Yeah.
Or and if you like, my perception might not be the perception of, you know, Joe Blog customer. And so what's your, you know, after running so many, what's your bead on digital events and where things are at with them?
Yeah, I mean, your fatigue comment, I can totally picture. I'll say we're in that season. So we came off Inspire, and now we've got Ignite. And so, like, we're, you know, the next 2 months will look very different than the last 2 months, I would say. But more broadly speaking, it's fascinating, you know, as an industry, that we all can shut off in-person events and have, I think, some relative success with digital events. And I'd love to get your specific perspective, because I was feeling like, gosh, I miss the in-person, and I just, how can you have any success with digital? And we've been proven wrong there. And I think, you know, a lot of people are incredibly pleased with the offerings. And one of the things that really caught my eye was, gosh, you're just so much more inclusive with these, because those of us that are not in the time zone, and I was talking to someone, it was either Australia or New Zealand, said, hey, I never made the trip. It was just too far. It's a whole week. And gosh, now I can pick up some of these events. And I thought, for me, I was like, oh yeah, I didn't even think through that angle. And so numbers seem to be up. Now, the question is like, is it the same level of engagement? And clearly, we all miss an in-person sit down, shake your hand, you know, really read the room. And hopefully, you know, God willing, we can all get back to that state someday soon. But I think in the interim, it's nice that digital can help us all have some sort of connection in the meanwhile.
Yeah. I mean, definitely the inclusiveness, right? I mean, I don't know. I would have spent, you know, probably in the hundreds of thousands on transportation over my career, in going to, you know, whether the, you know, Microsoft Partner Conference and wherever the GO it was, BizApp Summit, you know, and its predecessor Convergence, all these different events. I was going to the US at least 2 to 3 times a year just for conferences. And I know a lot of people could not do that,
yeah.
right? Their careers wouldn't allow it. It's the downtime from work. There's so many different factors. It's more than just the flights. And I, you know, I think the numbers speak for themselves, how inclusive these events have become. And I think for, you know, it's kind of like those of us that have been around for a while, are we just hankering to the good old days? And this is not this is not the That's world right. anymore, right? We're in a new world where things are faster, where people want to consume information. I think Microsoft, you know, when I was talking with Alyssa, the numbers, you know, off MBAS, for example, a mind-blowingly different They're factor than in the in-person, right? And so if you think bang for buck and are you getting that knowledge transfer, I think you're getting it. I think the old school folks are missing the week away from work, week away from maybe family, you know, having a few more beers than they probably would in a normal work week and things like that. I think that nostalgia, you know, is obviously gone. But I think for the newcomer coming in, they're going to know no different. Like my kids don't know what a landline phone is. Right? Because they never had one. They never seen one. It's never been in our house while they've been alive type thing. So I'm wondering if it's that same type of thing. This is the new norm.
And I wonder if we don't land in a spot somewhere halfway in between where we go back someday, hopefully, to the ability to have an in-person event, however big or small, but with a huge digital presence on the back end. And so for those that can't make it that week or don't want to travel or can't, that there's actually a digital presence there as well.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on the community? You know, but particularly once again, since James come in, he often will open his events with some phenomenal numbers of community engagement now. And I'm talking about the effort, the communication, the blogging, the videos, the content, the meetups, the groups, that type of thing that happen that are non-paid, you know, that people are doing this because they're just passionate about the technology. What impact have you seen on the business by this massive groundswell of community getting behind the products, falling in love with the products and really just evangelizing on their own time?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's one of those like intangible things about a business that's just incredibly important. And it's hard to put a number or a word to the value that it brings.
Yeah.
But it's just so critically important. And, you know, from things like, hey, are people enjoying the things they're working on to is there also this sort of organic viral way for people to engage and interact and like or not like and ideally even get a feedback loop back to our engineering team to tweak or change or build out or adapt. And so I think it's just incredibly important. And I think for us, one of the more promising areas there is the Power Platform. And so, you know, I think we always dabbled, we always had some. I think it's stronger than it has been, and yet I think it's an area we want to continue to put muscle behind. And Power Platform is just this area where you get a lot of organic groundswell, user communities. You think of Power Apps in an environment, in a customer. There are some where they purchase tops down, CIO makes a decision and pushes it. But more than that, you see these places where, you know, the citizen developers, they find on their own, they solve a business problem.
Yeah.
And then usage just starts to be pervasive. And that is like product health right there when that happens.
Yeah. So true. Are you guys looking seriously at, you know, Africa and the countries in Africa? There just seems to be a massive, what I'm observing as well, a massive groundswell across Africa at the moment in adoption of the Power Platform Dynamics. There seems to be a lot of growth, a lot of people moving their careers into the space. Is that something that you're observing?
Now that you said, I'll have to go look at it with that lens. I can't say that I have, but I think you just pointed me, and so I will.
So in closing, tell us what numbers can you share with us around the growth? What is 2021 looking like for you from a, what are you thinking?
Yeah. So we, you know, we go through a process each quarter. We help write up the script for Amy Hood and Satya as they do the official earnings. And, you know, it used to be that we only disclose the total Dynamics growth rate, which has both the cloud and on-prem.
Yeah.
And about 2 years ago, we said, I forget the exact date, we started to say, well, hey, that cloud one's incredibly important. So we started to disclose cloud. And then every once in a while, we size the business. And we just did that recently. And so Satya shared that the Dynamics business surpassed $3 billion with over 60% of that in Dynamics 365.
Wow.
So that excludes Power BI. That's the Dynamics franchise. And so last quarter, the Dynamics 365 piece grew 38%. And so first and foremost, you know, we're over $1 billion. Growing pretty healthy. And we have aspirations and eyesights to take that much, much bigger. But we're pleased with the progress there. And then, more importantly, we're seeing these little grass shoots of new product categories come in and take off. So Customer Insights, as an example, which is our CDP offering, was the fastest growing D365 app ever. We feel great about that. It's a new category. That market's not been made, and so we're really bullish there in that space. Power Apps, Power Automate, we see incredible MAU and usage there, which is promising. Power BI is much more mature, and so we're very, very pleased with both the size and the growth there. And then you go to what we used to call F&O, today, commerce, finance, supply chain. We shared that 4,500 organizations are using that collection, which makes it one of the fastest growing SaaS solutions in its category.
Yeah, yeah.
So across, you know, the portfolio is broad now. And we sometimes use a slide where we break into six discrete TAMs. And so it takes a long answer like that to go through, you know, the different elements of our portfolio, and each has its own set of competitors and benchmark there. But we're, you know, as I said, we're pleased with the top line. We're pleased with some of the newer emerging categories. But we also have our sights to, you know, there's a lot more ahead for us as a business.
Yeah. So good. So exciting. It's good to hear the update. Okay. Just before we wrap up with some quick fire questions, who do you recommend I should get on the show as a guest in the future?
Well, so I have two for you.
Okay.
I sincerely doubt you've talked to Vahe, and he's in fact not even in the role. So I think
we will wait till later in the year for him till he gets his feet under
but
the
I
desk.
Think you should do that. Toby Bowers is another name that I think you haven't talked to.
Yeah, I know Toby.
But I
haven't had him on, but I, you know, we've done some of those live stream at events with Toby. So, and of course he's just taken the ISV rule, right?
Yeah. So that's right. And I think that he both works with the field connection. He works on the marketing side, and then he plays a huge part on the ISV side. And it's just such an important area for us to get right as a business.
Yeah.
And I would say we're like in the very earliest stages, and we think that we've got some things going with the ISV Connect program, but it's by no means said and done you know, solved for world hunger. And so, you know, it's an area where we want to get right. And so he's just a fantastic guy, and he's working across the whole team there space.
There's certainly a lot to be done in the ISV space. a lot to be done.
I know you'll agree with that one. That's probably a whole nother dialogue.
Yes, that's so true. Anyhow, let's do some quick fire questions. These are random, and that means they're fully random. They're not targeted.
All right.
Are you ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
What's the first concert you ever went to?
Grateful Dead.
Wow, okay. The Grateful Dead fans, they sound like they're a particular type of fan, aren't they?
Yeah, it was an eye opener. I think it was like 16, and it was the first concert of their last year. It was quite amazing.
Crazy. Who would you like to play in a movie?
Who would I like to play in a movie? Oh my gosh.
You're like James Bond or somebody like that.
Well, because you put that there. I don't watch enough movies, so I'll go with James Bond until I come up with a better one.
Okay. What are you most looking forward to in the next 10 years?
Seeing my boys grow up and making sure that they're in the right place.
Yeah, so true. If you could know when you are going to die, would you want to know?
No.
Yeah, I agree. Would you rather win the lottery or live twice as long?
Live twice as long.
Yeah. It might be possible. They say by 2050 we'll become immortal, right? So who in your life inspires you to be better?
My parents.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. Well, we're done. It's been great to have you on the show, Jeff. I really appreciate it. It's been a long time coming. And I'll tag you in when this all goes live.
Thanks for having me. It was a blast, and it was a lot of fun, and all the best to you.
Hey, thanks for listening. I'm your host, Business Applications MVP, Mark Smith, otherwise known as the NZ365 Guy. If there's a Microsoft guest you'd like to see on the show, please message me on LinkedIn. Please like and subscribe. If you want to leave a review, go to nz365guy.com/review. It lists all my current reviews and gives you options if you want to leave your own. See you next time.